Blog Talk Radio. It's time for Monday Night Radio. Monday night is your night to talk with the experts. Call us now to get into the queue at 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6. Call us now or email your questions and comments to comments@mondaynightradio.com or tweet them to us at Monday Radio. And now, here's your host, Ann P. Mitchell, Esquire. And several of you let me know exactly how your Thanksgivings were going to go, but you never got back to me to let me know if they went that way that you really had been hoping. So you know the number and you know the comment line. The number to call is 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6. And you can send your comments to comments@mondaynightradio.com. Or you can send us a message via AOL Instant Messenger to Monday Night Radio, or find us on Facebook at facebook.com, Monday Night Radio, or you can send us a tweet via Twitter at mondayradio.com. And producer Evan has just told me that for some reason the system had a glitch and that I was on mute at first. So I have to apologize for that and to let you know what you missed, if you missed anything, was my asking how your Thanksgiving was. Mine, by the way, was absolutely wonderful. Instead of doing the everybody come over and pig out and cook for hours thing, as we usually do, we went into Denver and we had a vegan Thanksgiving feast, if you can believe it, with the Vegetarian Society of Colorado. And it was absolutely delightful. It was so interesting to see all the different people who are vegetarians and vegans that you might never imagine it. There are a lot of us out there. In fact, we're everywhere. Anyway, let us know how your Thanksgiving was by sending us email to comments@mondaynightradio.com. And, of course, you can call in and call in now to talk to our guest expert. That call-in number, again, is 866-MONDAY-6. And today we are going to talk about problems in the workplace and how you can change your workplace from a prison to a sanctuary. And first, just to let you know about next week's show, as we move in closer to the holidays, a lot of people find themselves feeling really down during the holidays, or they have family members that become depressed during the holidays. It's a really well-known phenomenon, the holiday blues. But what can you do about it? That's what we'll be talking about next week when we talk with Dr. Ken Unger, who specializes in helping people to help themselves deal with depression and blues without medication. In fact, Dr. Unger is called the soul doctor. This man has over 30 years of counseling and spiritual healing experience. He's got degrees in counseling and psychology, and he is going to answer your questions about holiday depression. All right. This, however, is not a depressing topic, although it could be, but actually it's going to be an uplifting topic because our guest, Linda Barbaccia, is going to talk with us about how to handle workplace issues and how to change your workplace from a place that you may dread going in the morning to a place that you look forward to going and that can actually replenish you. She is the author of the book Simple Wisdom for the Not-So-Simple Business World, and it is my great pleasure to welcome to the show Linda Barbaccia. Hi, Linda. How are you tonight?
Hi, I'm doing great. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. Did you have a nice Thanksgiving?
Oh, I had a most wonderful Thanksgiving. I was actually down in Cabo San Lucas with my family. So it was about 90 degrees down there, very balmy. And it was interesting to come back to, here to Denver with the snow and freezing temperatures.
Well, yeah, I have to say Thanksgiving in Cabo. I say Thanksgiving in Cabo sounds good.
Pretty darn special, yes.
My Thanksgiving in Denver was lovely. So,
oh, I'm sure it was. Yes.
So let's talk a little bit, first of all, about your background. I've been looking over your bio, and you have so much experience with so many different things that it would take the whole hour just to tell our listening audience all of your credentials. So why don't you lead in with what you feel is the most relevant?
The reason for writing this book and what motivated me to write the book is that I worked in many different businesses and corporation settings throughout my work life, and just always found myself feeling sort of downtrodden and very weighed down by my work. A lot of abusive bosses and just different very negative scenarios that I was confronted with in the workplace. And of course, you know, my gosh, I needed to work. So I every day went into these workplaces and just dealt with them as best I could. But it really got to the point where it was taking its toll on my health, overall health and well-being. And so it just became, after about 25 years of this, it became kind of my life's mission, really, to find a workplace which is supportive and harmonious. I didn't even know what that really meant, but I just sort of had this feeling that at some point I would stumble upon that. And I actually indeed did so. I worked for a university by the name of Naropa, which you've probably heard of, Naropa University in Boulder. And it was just really one of the most lovely work environments that I have ever encountered. It was to the point where it was a 9-to-5 job, and it was an administrative position, and basically could have been considered a boring job, but it was anything but that because of the environment that we created there, and we went to great lengths to create this lovely work environment, and it was really a situation where I literally looked forward to going to work every single day. I awakened without the use of an alarm clock. And I absolutely looked forward to seeing everyone that I worked with. And every aspect of that job was just a grand and glorious experience. And so I thought, well, my gosh, maybe I can just sort of outline what it is that, we created so that other workplaces can experience the same sort of bliss. And so that's what I did. I sat down and I just kind of went through. The first part of my book talks about the physical environment and creating a really wonderful, beautiful flow of energy via creating a beautiful workspace, essentially, or creating your workspace sanctuary is the actual title of the first part of the book. And then the second part of the book is called The Unconditional Workplace and what it meant for us to interact with one another very soulfully and what that meant to us and how it shifted our view of work and what it means to go to work each day and collect a paycheck, basically. So that's what I've done in my book, is just outline this and my work and my goals are to bring this information into workplaces everywhere. I mean, I just recently read a staggering statistic that 92% of the American workforce doesn't like their jobs. I mean, my word, that's a staggering statistic. That's an awful lot of pain and misery. I mean, if you think about having to force yourself, and I've been through this, having to force yourself to get out of bed each morning and talk to yourself, into going into these workplaces. But of course, we all have to work, so. I'm just really hoping to, my goal is to lighten everyone's loads just by what I've written in this book, which is quite simple. Everything that I've written about in this book is very simple to implement. So just some...
Let me ask you...
Yes.
I'm sorry. What were some of the things that really struck you when you first started at Naropa, and yes, I am familiar with Naropa, and for those of you out there who are not familiar, not from Colorado, Naropa is, now correct me if I'm wrong, Linda, but I have been told it is one of the only, if not the only, Buddhist-based universities in the United States.
Yes, it is. It was founded by a Tibetan Buddhist scholar. But there are also, there's many, many different teachings there. It's not solely focused on Buddhism. But what I found most amazing about the environment is how you were perfectly welcomed to bring your spiritual side to work with you each day, and how that opened up just tremendous avenues of peace and tranquility while working, you know, in basically a stressful environment. Because it was your, like I said, it was your typical workplace with the usual stresses and conflicts, et cetera, et cetera. But because we were allowed to bring our spiritual sides into work each day, it just added a much deeper ingredient into what it means to work, and just it really lessened the burden of work. That was the first thing that struck me about it. And then, of course, that was reflected in every aspect of how we communicated with one another throughout our busy work weeks, and how we resolved conflicts so easily and readily. There was never, the energy in that office was crystal clear, let's just put it that way. There was never any second-guessing anyone. There was a tremendous amount of trust between us. We were all completely free to express ourselves or come up and you know, discuss a new idea. Even if others disagreed, everything was welcomed. That's what I mean by unconditional, because there were no conditions. We were just accepted for who we were, basically. A lot of open hearts that each one of us had. There was no presence of gossiping whatsoever. That was just, we knew that that was a destructive force and we weren't going to go there, period. If we had a problem with an individual, and of course problems always arise, we confronted that person immediately and communicated with them in a very, very healthy way to the, you know, where the conflict was resolved. So it was just a very clear, clean place to work, and we just upheld these principles throughout the course of our days at all costs. It was just what we valued. And we knew how purposeful it was to create this kind of an environment during our work week. So,
you're listening to Monday Night Radio with our guest, Linda Barbaccia, who is the author of Simple Wisdom for the Not-So-Simple Business World. And we are talking about stress and conflict in the workplace and what you can do to help change your workplace so that you don't have to dread going in the morning, but rather can look forward to it. Linda, I'm wondering, everything you're talking about sounds like it makes so much sense, and it sounds idyllic. And I'm wondering a couple of things. First of all, I'm wondering if some of that you think might be attributed to their hiring process. You know, if you know, you talk about being allowed to have your spiritual side and being crystal clear and saying what you need to say. And even in the most gentle, if you will, of environments that fosters that, if you don't hire people that will fit with that philosophy, it's still not going to work. So how much of that do you think, you know, is to their credit for the people they hired?
You know, I'm not really sure what their hiring process consists of. I mean, I'm assuming, for me, let me just explain how it was that I ended up there. I was asked by some roommates to post a flyer there, and I knew nothing about Naroka. I just happened to, you know, walk onto the campus one day to post a flyer and was just hit with this, you know, incredible, first of all, the physical environment was just absolutely beautiful, what they had created there, and the employees were just so wonderful to me, and it was obvious that they were, you know, working under tremendously, you know, stressful conditions, but yet they all remained so present and so grounded and so humble in the work that they were doing. That was just something that I knew I needed and wanted to experience, and something that had just been so lacking, you know, in my life for so many years. And so I actually went to work there as a volunteer, and of course just fell in love with it and was lucky enough to be offered a position there. But I really don't know, you know, I would assume that probably the people who do apply for positions there, you know, are well aware of the Buddhist influence and what the university represents and are therefore, you know, online with those philosophies. So are very eager to jump into that sort of a work situation. But, you know, quite frankly, there are a lot of places that I know of which, you know, are spiritual organizations, but they do not uphold that in their business dealings. So I don't know whether I answered your question or not. I may not have answered it. You know, certainly we were all online with that philosophy and upholding that throughout, you know, our busy work week. So I don't know.
So what? I think to the, as much as you can without having been inside the heads of the hiring manager. Yeah.
Right.
And I think you're right that, you know, Naropa certainly has a reputation, and I think you're right that people who would be applying for jobs there are probably applying knowing that reputation and knowing its philosophies,
yes.
and that's a good
yes.
fit for them. So what
yes.
about, you know, what advice do you have for people who maybe the kind of people who, gosh, a place like Naropa would sound so wonderful, but they're at a more traditional place dealing with sort of the more traditional and mundane workplace issues, sort of a square peg
yes.
in that round hole. And what, you know,
right.
you know,
right.
we'll go to caller questions soon, but, you know, generally what would be your advice to them? How do you tell them
well,
to sort of...
I have to say, I will tell you, and I get asked this question frequently, because, of course, prior to my experience at Naropa, I was working in, you know, more traditional businesses. And I'd already had a pretty strong, you know, spiritual background for some years. And so what I was doing and what is absolutely what I thoroughly encourage people to do is you do some of the things that I've mapped out in my book. You do, you know, some of the meditations. You basically do this on your own. And so that when you walk into the workplace, you're in this incredibly wonderful, grounded place. And literally you begin to notice that others around you are responding to you differently. And I have story after story to share about this very thing. It's actually a miracle. I've been in situations with severely abusive bosses, and I've walked into the workplace and had that boss, you know, turn to me with a huge radiant smile on his or her face and greet me and then turn around and start screaming and yelling at another employee. You know,
wow.
And that employee coming up and saying to me, my word, what in the heck are you doing? You know, this is the worst boss I've ever had. He continually goes off on me, but yet he looks at you with his wonderful smile and greets you and leaves you alone every day. What are you doing? So it's completely, you absolutely can do this on your own. But of course, when you have a whole team behind you, you know, that is really the most idyllic of settings, but you can certainly do this work by yourself with tremendous results. Oh, my word, yes. So,
well, I think we have a caller here who would love to be able to see that. Before we go to the lines, let's just, again, put the number out there. If you would like to talk with Linda, who is a workplace environment specialist, give us a call at 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6. Or if you are a little bit nervous about coming on, even though you can be anonymous, you can email your questions or comments to comments@mondaynightradio.com or send us a message by AOL Instant Messenger at Monday Night Radio or via Twitter at Monday Radio. And don't forget also to go to our website at mondaynightradio.com and sign up for our email newsletter. It's free and it will let you know about all of our upcoming shows and other interesting tidbits. Let's go to the lines. We have Allison calling from Washington, D.C. She has a question with you. Allison, good evening. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm here. I have a coworker, and we're having a weird thing. He has not talked to me since September, and there's only two of us in our office, so it's kind of glaring when someone's not talking to the person, but there's nothing I really can do to talk to him because he walks into the office, and he just goes into the office and doesn't talk to me all day and goes home, and then it's weird. So I don't know what to do.
Yes, that can definitely make for some pretty awkward feelings in the workplace. Basically, gosh, I'm trying to think if I've ever been confronted with something like that. I think, you know, what I would do essentially is, of course, it sounds like you may already be doing this, is just let him be who he is. And, you know, maybe at times just kind of sense, see if you can tune into your intuition and sense if he might be, you know, available or open to some kind of conversation. You can also do, I mean, if this is somebody that you want to engage with, which, you know, obviously when you're working with somebody, it is fun to have conversations with that person, to be able to talk and giggle with them. It certainly, you know, makes work so much more enjoyable. You could also do some visualizations about this person too, and some meditations at the risk of sounding really airy-fairy here. But, you know, this can be pretty powerful if you just sit maybe quietly and maybe envision yourself having a conversation with him, or envision yourself even perhaps asking him, you know, why he doesn't want to speak with you, and see if you get an answer. We can work with people energetically and have some profoundly amazing results. Or see if you can perhaps, you know, before going to work each morning, just center yourself and ground yourself more and put yourself more in a joyous place. And people have an amazing way of responding to that joy. And that could bring him, you know, out of his shell. Or, I don't know. I mean, maybe if that's helped you at all, I don't know. But I do know how uncomfortable it can be to, work with someone like that. But patience and giving this person some time. And, you know, eventually they'll open up to you, you know.
Allison, have you tried just in a very non-confrontational way confronting him, which I realize that sounds kind of oxymoronic, but have you just tried asking him, why aren't you talking to me? Do you have any idea why? Allison? Did we lose her? Oh, dear, we lost her. We did lose her. Well, Allison, if you're still out there listening, I'm wondering if what do you think of that, Linda? I mean, that would be my first, it would be to just sort of go into his office or call him over and just say, hey, you know, what's going on? Because, you know, we don't know the backstory, and if Allison doesn't call back in, we may never know the backstory. But
right.
You know, if he, you know, it may be something that has absolutely nothing to do with her. You know, he might have just lost his wife. It might be too painful to talk to a female. You just don't know without asking.
There could be a number of different reasons. Yeah, you could start with the asking, but I've had some pretty amazing experiences working with people energetically as well. That may have kind of thrown her off, I think, too, talking about working with people energetically. Yeah, you don't have to be physically present in order to work with people. And I've had a lot of amazing breakthroughs with that. But coming forward and asking someone why they don't want to speak to you, or there's something I said, or can we work this out, or certainly, absolutely, that works as well.
We we have a someone who's written in, and they said that they were actually on the other side of the coin, and they were having a conversation with a colleague, and I guess they got a bit worked up, and the next thing they knew, they had sworn at that colleague before they even realized what had come out of their mouth. And you know, he says that he immediately apologized, but you know, I think that that sort of goes to this also, you know, that you don't know what's going on the other side. And as I said, here's an example of someone writing in saying that, that you know, they would have been the person about which someone else was calling in to say, what do I do? Fortunately, in this case, they had the presence of mind to immediately apologize. But you know, if you could talk a little bit about that aspect, when you have that coworker from hell, you know, is the first thing that you suggest to sort of see if you can take the me out of it by, you know, having people realize this may really not be about me at all?
Oh, yes. I mean, absolutely. And then there's also, I don't know, how do I say this? You know, the light cancels out the dark. I can remember a situation when I worked for Nordstrom, a very, very difficult, highly competitive woman that I worked with. And I just let her be who she is. I mean, in fact, I never even confronted her. I knew she was saying some horrible things about me behind my back. And I just let her do her thing. And because I had done these, you know, meditations and, you know, grounding exercises and what have you, and I would arrive to work each day in this beautiful and wonderful space, literally, she basically disappeared one day. She just quit. She walked. No one knew why she left. And I've had this experience on numerous occasions. It's just that the light cancels out the dark. I mean, certainly sometimes you do, it's very important to confront people too, you know, and just say, oh my gosh, can we please, you know, sit down and talk about this, clear the air, what have you. But when we are coming from a very, very joyous, heart-centered place, that light cancels out all these other dark scenarios. It's just they just automatically go away. It's just that simple. And like I said, I've had this experience time after time again. So, you know, I don't know, maybe I know this might be for your listeners maybe something a little bit over the top or something that they really can't quite comprehend. But it's something that I've been practicing for years, and it has some pretty miraculous results when we're working with our own energy. And putting ourselves in a very, very heart-centered space. So,
you are listening to Linda Barbaccia on Monday Night Radio. And Linda, I have to ask you, am I saying your last name right? Okay, thank you. I read, thank you for sending. Barbaccia, see, that at the end throws me off every time. there is an A at the end, right?
There is an idea. It's
all right.
Pronounced, but we shorten
it here
in America.
Okay, so you're listening to Monday Night Radio with our guest Linda Barbaccia, and she is the author of Simple Wisdom for the Not-So-Simple Business World, and we are talking about issues in the workplace and how we can be that change. And, you know, I just made that connection. I don't know, Linda, if you know that last week our guest was Mahatma Gandhi's grandson, Arun Gandhi, how one person can be the change. And so, really, we're continuing that theme.
That's
because
exactly
one person...
Yes.
That's right. One person can be the change in the workplace. And you can call in and talk with Linda and ask her to give you some insights into your workplace dilemmas at 866-MONDAY-6. Or as some of our listeners are doing, if you want to email your questions and comments, you can email them to comments@mondaynightradio.com. Or you can send us an AOL Instant Messenger message at Monday Night Radio. Or send us a tweet at Monday Radio. You can also find us on Facebook at Monday Night Radio. Linda, we have another person. This is an unusual show. Instead of calling, people seem to be wanting more to write in, and that's okay. I don't mind being their mouthpiece. I'm used to doing that. We have someone who is writing in just saying, all they're saying is their boss is a bully. So I'm not exactly sure what that looks like, but certainly in any event, having a bully for a boss seems like it would not be a very comfortable place to be. What do you say to that?
Right. Well, I've certainly been in that position numerous times. And, you know, 20 years ago, I used to fight. I would get involved in these power struggles with individuals like this. And, of course, that just completely and totally, it just adds to the negative energy around it and makes the work environment almost intolerable. And, of course, you know, makes that bully even more difficult to deal with. So I think I mentioned to you before about a boss that I had who would come in and just yell and scream and put everyone down, but yet would come into my office and smile and, you know, greet me very warmly each day and never, ever once yelled at me. And I'm looking, really thinking about that whole situation. And again, you know, a lot of what happens in workplaces, too, when someone is being really difficult like that, is we end up gossiping about that person a lot. Maybe we go home and talk to our spouse about how horrible this person is and all the things that they're doing and saying, blah, 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 blah. And again, you know, all of this just adds to all of that negative energy, and it just makes the whole situation larger to where it's just huge and blown out of proportion. And what I have found is just to leave the person alone and to not get caught up in any of these, you know, negative gossiping sessions. You know, I know this particular boss that I had, everybody was gossiping about him continually, and I would literally just step out of any gossip circles like that. I never once said anything bad about him. You know, and people can feel that. People can feel when you're speaking negatively about them behind their backs. They really can feel that and sense it. We're very sensitive beings. And so I just completely, I never, ever said one negative thing about him. In fact, I don't even think I thought anything negative about him. I just let him be who he is. And as I said, eventually this man, you know, was became a good friend of mine, actually. So it's really just not getting caught up in that person's negativity and just letting them be who they are. It's like you're sort of just, you're going into acceptance mode. You don't like it, of course, but you're just accepting that that's, and actually, too, we could even talk about compassion here, too, because anybody who's being a bully, that's a known and proven fact that bullies come from very, very dysfunctional backgrounds. And there's probably a lot of pain that this person is experiencing, emotional, psychological wounds that have not been resolved. And so really we can just apply a lot of compassion to someone. That person's really suffering. They really are. So it's really important to just really create a lot of compassion around a person like that. And that's where the healing comes in. And you'd be surprised how that person will back down. It's really quite amazing.
I have had many jobs over the course of many, many years, and some of them, most of the workplaces generally themselves have been all right. There was one notable exception, and some of you out there listening, I'm sure, are already grinning because you'll know exactly of where I speak, where the situation was pretty dysfunctional. And in a case like that, where you may have leadership who are nice people but aren't necessarily great leaders or don't know how to handle a problematic employee, you know, in that kind of a situation, just one person, if they are the wrong person, can make the can just throw the energy of the entire office. And in fact, I have worked in a place where one person was able to drive just about everyone else to quit after driving them to tears. And granted, you know, I mean, so I certainly myself get that you can be in that kind of a situation, and it could be a boss. And so what I'm wondering, though, when you're talking about that you didn't partake in the gossip, which I certainly commend you for, but, you know, you would step away from it and you didn't take part in it. And I wonder, you know, I could see in that situation, because I've seen in that situation, that that could actually lead to you being alienated from the, you know, the whole rest of the group, where the group would start thinking, you know, all of your other coworkers are thinking, oh, well, you know, you're the person, you know, you're the mean bully boss's pet, and you're in their pocket, you're kissing up to them, where you could end up having the entire rest of the workers in that office sort of be against you. And have you seen that, or how would you, you know, how can someone gracefully distance themselves from the negative energy, the gossip, the negativity, without seeming then also like what they're trying to do is be the goody-goody who's kissing up to the boss?
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent question, actually, and I'm referring back to that situation with that horrific boss, and I'm trying to remember how I dealt with that, because it was not a situation where I was ever considered his pet, because I wasn't kissing it up to him. All I was doing was standing there doing my job. I would never for one moment, you know, kiss it up to him or try to be his pet. I mean, it was never that way, and I think the other employees knew that. But, you know, during conversations with the other employees, I was somehow able to keep this boss out of our conversations and relate to these other individuals on other levels that didn't include this horrific boss. I just remember having a lot of conversations, and they were not centered around our dysfunctional boss. You know, they weren't. I mean, and I don't ever remember anyone calling me his pet. Because, as I said, I wasn't kissing it up to him. I wasn't, you know, buying him gifts or, you know, giving him endless streams of compliments. Nothing like that. I was just letting him be who he is and not responding and not getting caught up in other people's, you know, when he would go off on someone else. I never got caught up in any of that. I just stepped aside and did my job, basically. I just kept my nose clean and did my work. I mean, I was there for a purpose, and that was to do a certain job, and I did that each day, and I related to all the other people around me. I kept a lot of humor in the picture, a lot of giggling, a lot of, you know, fun, lighthearted interactions with everyone, and kept him out of our conversations, basically. I was just able to shift the conversation into something much more positive and productive than complaining about our boss. And therefore, I was friends with everybody in that place, really. And I was not alienated from anyone. There's specific, you know, communication techniques that a person can use, at the risk of me going into any real detail about it. But for me, it just felt very natural to keep, because, I mean, you know, he was our boss, and I needed to work, and so I wanted to make it as positive as I possibly could. In fact, you know, I think if anything, you know, people would enjoy having me around, because I wasn't complaining about him. I wasn't going into the more negative aspects of our job. I was keeping everything lighthearted and throwing humor in at every turn. I was never alienated there, not at all. Like I said, it's just a lot of turning negativity, you know, into positivity, basically. You just have to learn how to do that and not getting caught up in the heavier aspects of work.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
That makes any sense to you?
It makes perfect sense to me. It makes perfect sense.
I know that when we're in these positions, though, it can be extremely challenging to do that. But you know, we can turn that into something that can be really fun, actually. You know, and this is something that I work with people on is, you know, now you're faced with a new challenge at work, but let's make this something fun, you know, and exciting. You almost turn it into a fun and exciting game, you know? And it was just really pretty amazing to just sit back and watch, you know, all the different shifts that we are capable, of creating, in such a positive way. It really is. I mean, again, this is really, we're also talking about personal power here and how we do have the power to break through some of the most horrifically negative situations. We can break through that. We have that power. And really, it's actually quite simple. It really is. So
our guest tonight is Linda Barbacci. And you are listening to Monday Night Radio, and you can give Linda a call at 866-MONDAY-6 or send us an email at comment@mondaynightradio.com with your question. You can also send us a question from the chat room for those of you in there tonight. And, you know, there's something I want to say. I actually have what I consider to be perhaps the epitome of the bully boss. Seriously, I cannot imagine if you can top this story, and I swear that it's all true. Many, many years ago, when I was a very young single mother supporting my then young daughter, I took a job as an office manager of a company, and I won't say any more about where the company was or what sort of company it was because I don't really want to identify them that closely. But I took this job. And it was a small family-held company, and the owner carried a loaded gun in his pocket, a pistol.
Oh, my gosh.
And we knew that. We knew that, and everyone knew that. And that on its own wasn't the really horrific part, but at one time, he had quite a temper, a very, very sharp temper. And I sat right outside his office, and I was sitting at my desk, and he opened his door, and he was in a rage, and he kicked a full Mr. Coffee at me in my direction. And I immediately left, and he sent some of the other, some of my colleagues out to find me and begged me, you know, to come back, and, you know, he was very sorry, and, you know, it would never happen again, and, you know, I, again, being a single parent and needing the job, you know, I thought, okay, you know, once, you know, you get one kick, basically, not what I would do now, but I was much younger then, again, certainly not what I would recommend, and so at one point, he told me that it was a good thing I had left when I did, because his next action was going to be to pull the pistol out of his pocket and shoot me.
What? Oh, for heaven's sake.
That's when I left and did not go back. And in fact, this was before I had even thought about going into the law, but I filed for unemployment despite the fact that I quit. It's known as constructive discharge, and I won that hearing.
Oh, fabulous.
So there are certainly times when, and the part of the reason I'm telling this is just because, you know, I have to believe that is the most horrific story. I certainly hope it is.
Absolutely, it is.
Yes. So people out there can at least
I've
feel
never
like...
Heard of, wow.
Yeah.
That is, I've never heard a story like that before. Oh my gosh.
It's pretty shocking. Here I am and I'm laughing about it. And I think that's an important thing. But the other thing is that what I think that really illustrates is, and this is what I'd like you to talk about, is there are times when it's more important to take care of yourself. There are some workplace situations where they simply can't be fixed and they are intolerable. Yes. And it doesn't make you wrong to feel that way.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. My gosh. And your story, definitely. oh my word, I mean, your life was in danger around this person. Absolutely, you walk, definitely. Any kind of a situation like that, you were absolutely right in doing so. My gosh, with all the work experience that I've had and the horrors that I've experienced, that certainly, that story you just shared definitely takes the cake. But yes, there are, yes, and you have to know. I mean, it's really, you know, tuning into your intuition and, you know, listening to your intuition and knowing when it is time for you to leave a situation which is completely and totally intolerable. And beyond repair, really. Of course, you have to know that. You know, I feel really lucky that I was never confronted with what you just described. Oh, my word.
Let's go to the phones again, because we have Jeff calling from, hey, he's local. He's calling from Boulder, and he wants to talk about those long work days. Hi there, Jeff. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. Welcome to the show. And you have a question for Linda?
Yeah, I was just wondering, how do you go about cultivating a positive attitude at the beginning of an obviously long day?
Cultivating a positive attitude. Well, I go through that in my book, basically. The book starts out at the very beginning of your day, in the morning, and starting your day, basically just taking some time for yourself in the morning. If you can situate some time, you know, even if it's just 15 or 20 minutes, I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, set their alarms, they're jolted, you know, out of a deep sleep, they leap out of bed, you know, take a quick shower, grab that cup of coffee, and off to work they go. And I just don't think that really makes for a very positive person throughout the course of the day. I think it's really important to learn how to just take some time for yourself. Start your day out slowly and quietly. Maybe spend some reflective time, you know, outdoors if you can. You know, again, my book describes, you know, in depth, just some very, very simplistic ideas which are going to make a huge difference in how you start your day. I think mornings are just essential for how you set up your day and the amount of energy that you experience throughout the course of your day. And then, of course, it goes through the entire day. We talked about the lunch hour, just different things that you can do throughout the course of your day so that you keep your energy level high, basically. So at the end of the day, you're not completely exhausted. You're not feeling really drained. You still have, you know, a significant amount of energy at the end of your day. But I think the morning is a very, very significant time. And, you know, a lot of us, you know, are just so busy and so rushed that we don't really, you know, take that time of day after we've awakened and really use it to our full benefit. And, you know, again, I do have some ideas in my book as to some things that you could do to just slowly start out your day so you arrive to work in a really good frame of mind and maintain a good high energy level throughout the course of your day.
And let me just jump right in here, if you don't mind, because I have to recommend, Linda, the starting of the day, I agree. It's just so incredibly important how you start your day, because that does set the tone, especially if you're looking ahead at a long work day. And I would like to put a plug in here for something that I discovered a couple of years ago, and it's actually a local outfit, and it's called the Zen Alarm Clock. You may be familiar with it. And Jeff, you know, they're right there down on Pearl Street. And for the people who don't know what this is, first of all, you can get one through their website, which is now-zen.com, now-zen.com. And basically what it is it's an alarm clock that has a chime in it, an actual, like a little tube chime, like from an organ, only a very tiny one, or some of them have a beautiful round brass bowl that gets chimed. And you get woken up by a single chime, just a little bing, and that's it. And it's amazing that that will actually wake you up, but it does. And if it doesn't, 5 minutes later, it does it again. And then if you still don't turn the alarm off, it goes to 3 minutes and then 2 minutes. But it's never taken me more than just one chime. And you're fast asleep, and that one little chime just somehow gets into your consciousness enough to wake you up. And it is an incredible way to wake up compared to that of most alarm clocks.
I just had to put that out there because they're
not cheap, but wow. I mean, what an amazing
thing. Thank you for mentioning that. Yes, that's a wonderful suggestion. Very, very important. So the mornings are just a really sacred time, I feel. And I just really feel that Americans have really gotten away from that. And it's just really, like you said, it completely sets the tone for the entire day. How you spend your mornings.
Jeff, can I ask what do you do? Where do you work, but what do you do?
I'm a pre-K teacher's aide. So I'm
up early. Well, no wonder. Of course your days seem really long then. They're filled with lots of little kids running rampant. So the reason I ask is, because what I wanted to ask was, you know, if you wake up in the morning on the weekend and you have the whole long day ahead of you, does that feel a lot different than when you wake up on a school day and you have that day ahead of you? You know, does the length seem longer because of the content?
Yeah, in a way. Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I get up on the Saturday, it feels great. I tend to be an early riser, so it's just knowing that I have a whole day kind of to myself is nice.
So it really is about the content. And so that makes me, you know, now this is probably not the advice or not the direction that Linda would go. But, you know, I'm a huge, you know, advocate of you have to do what you love and love what you do and follow your passion. And I'm not saying you're not, but I'm just, you know, bringing that up because if you can sort of tease out what is it that makes a work day that's long seem like, oh, my God, what a long day. But then on a weekend, it's like, wow, what a long day. You know, to sort of figure out what is giving you that view. And once you've identified it, then even just transforming your own view of it can make such a huge difference.
Right. Right.
All right. Well, thank you very much for answering my question. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you
for
the
calling.
Call, Jeff. I didn't mean to step on you there, Linda, but I just, you know, I was curious.
I was struck by that. Yeah, I mean, we're very, you know, there's a lot of things going on here throughout the course of someone's days. Absolutely. So that was a great question. I'm glad you said that.
Well, I have a question. We have just about 8 minutes left, and before we go to the subject I'd like to bring up, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about your book and where they can get it and your website?
Yes, it's actually available through Amazon, and you can also order it directly from me on my website, which is lindabarbacci.com. if you can spell that name, should I spell the name or how?
It'll be linked from our site. You certainly can, but also they can find it right from the site.
Perfect. Yes. So those would be the two ways that you can get it. I'm also on Facebook too. So yes.
Okay. And so then my question that I wanted to ask was this: if for people who might be job hunting, which is, you know, in this economy, which is starting to sort of climb out, but still people are looking or might be relooking, or perhaps they've left after having their boss kick a coffee pot at them.
Right. Wow.
And for whatever reason, for people that are looking for a job, you know, that's the, you know, forewarned, forearmed, if you will. You know, what do you recommend people look for? Because, of course, if they can get into a good workplace situation to start, then they are so much more ahead of the game. So for people out there looking or who are contemplating switching, you know, what would you recommend?
Well, this might sound kind of awkward. For me, one of the first things that I would always look for when I walked into any business was the physical environment. I can remember having job interviews at places where, you know, they had, you know, piles of, you know, files stacked here and there, just a very, very untidy, disorganized work environment. I mean, you can tell a lot about a business just by the physical environment. And, of course, working in that kind of environment, you know, can really pull you down after a while. And it just tells me a lot about the integrity of the company, too, when it looks like that. So that's one of the first things that I would suggest to watch for, is just how the company looks, how the physical environment looks. Is it organized? Is it clean? That's first and foremost for me. Before I even speak to anybody, that's what I look for when I walk in. Very, very important.
Okay, that's actually, I think, a very good sort of right in the door, so to speak, that kind of can hit you. And I think people might tend to intentionally overlook it because you're obviously affected the minute you walk into somewhere by how it's set up. And I think people might tend to not listen to that little voice that says, oh, well, you know, this isn't a very tidy place or whatever. So let's say they pass the sniff test, if you will, then what would you look for?
I would look for, of course, well, see, I'm one of these people that I really tap into my my intuition. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's really important to the person who's interviewing you, their level of humility, the tone of their voice. It's just really important to kind of read between the lines, if you will, and to maybe look past some of the surface things that are taking place. It's just really important to focus on the integrity of the person and really, really, you know, even though you might be nervous or whatever, but really listen to what that person is saying when they're, you know, discussing the organization or what goes on there. Just really, really stay, you know, in tune with what they're saying, and just see if it's, you know, in agreement with you and your integrity. And use your intuition, basically. You know, tap into your intuition.
And do you find that most of the people... Go on.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said, do you find that most of the people who run into problems are people who are not listening to their gut feelings, who are ignoring that intuition?
Well, I can only answer that from my own experiences. And absolutely, in my life and times, when clearly there was something that I picked up on there that I knew wasn't going to work for me, but I accepted the job anyway, and it was always a disaster, always. So, I'd assume that everyone else would have the same experience. Very, very important to just get a feeling, just, you know, really sense how you feel when you're in the presence of that person who's going to be your future boss. How do you feel when you're around that person? You know, do you feel comfortable with that person? Does that person make you feel really nervous or intimidated? You know, how do you feel in the office in general? When you walked in the door, how did your body feel? How did you feel? Do you feel all tense? Does the energy in there feel light? Does it feel clear? You know, just really tap into how your body is feeling in these situations. But yeah, definitely in my own life, my gosh, you know, when I ignored a lot of these feelings that would come up for me, it was always disaster, always. So.
All right, we have just 1 minute left.
Okay.
And in that 1 minute, if you can, I'm sorry to put you on the spot like this, but very quickly, what would you suggest then to someone who is dealing with someone who really is just being mean to them, being rude to them? You know, just sort of recap that very quickly in the workplace.
Oh, gosh. I know how difficult that can be. Just really try to remain, you know, as heart-centered and as, oh, gosh, I hate to use the word loving because a lot of people might misinterpret that. I'm going to use the word compassionate, which I think is much, much better word here. If you can just stay centered and really, really have a lot of compassion for an individual like that, because as I said before, an individual like that is really suffering. I mean, think about it. He's spreading, you know, this person is spreading around all kinds of ugliness everywhere they go. Can you imagine how much pain that person is in? I mean, really think about that and just really focus on having a lot of compassion for that individual. You know, and who knows? I mean, that, you know, in my experience, that alone has stopped the person in its tracks, basically. So it's
I think that's excellent advice. Very excellent advice. Linda, thank you so much for joining us. This was really, really informative.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
It was absolutely our pleasure, and thank you again. Our guest was Linda Barbacci, and her book is Simple Wisdom for the Not-So-Simple Business World. It's available on Amazon, or you can get it right through her website, which you will find the link from our site at MondayNightRadio.com. Again, we will see you next week, or we won't see you really, but you can listen to us next week when our guest is Dr. Ken Unger, and he will be talking about how to deal with holiday depression.